This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
I want to move on to a panel discussion now, so you've got a chance to ask everybody questions. But before I do, I'd just like Richard Harries. I mean, you've heard a range of kind of different reflections, all really, though, about where we are now, how councils make the most of traditional sources of income, new ones, possible future ones, how they engage the current workforce, so that internal cultural issue, and how they deal with external challenge. I mean, given everything that's going on in DCLG and government in general, any reflections on what you've heard in the context of the budget, the local government resource review, etc.?
Yeah, thanks, Alexandra, and thank you for inviting me. I agree with you that this is an incredibly timely conference. There's no doubt about that. And I don't want to be too presumptuous and take up too much time because I know that the audience will want to ask questions, but certainly going through what I heard and some reflections on it, Catherine talked about the need for commerciality, a mentality of commerciality, and that absolutely must be right. For the last 3 years, I was working on local government finance, on council tax, on LABGI, those of you who remember and love that, and tax increment financing under the previous government. After the general election, I moved on to local government efficiency, and that signals, the importance this government puts in how it can help work with the local government group and councils to deliver the savings that are going to be required. And that's a combination of, obviously, cutting out costs now, but also looking at those longer-term service transformation options, like the sort of thing that Phil's talking about, that will make a real difference in the future. Commerciality has to be at the absolute heart of that. It has to be about a focus on understanding your costs, understanding what drives your business and how you manage that. And so with the local government group and their local productivity program, people like George Garlick in Durham have been looking at how you measure costs on a comparable basis. And good luck to him, because it's a hard job. One of the other things you mentioned, Catherine, which others also talked about, was a reference to customer focus. And that must be right, of course. I was intrigued by the Qantas example and where that story ended. And I know that I wouldn't want us to waste our time on a fruitless student debate, but there is a point that local authorities have clients and customers, and often the clients aren't paying customers, and there is a difference there, and it does inform the way that people are treated. And I think it's very important that we recognise that we should have a focus on our clients, whether or not they're paying customers or not, and that comes back to the idea of co-payments and perhaps two-tier services. Alison talked about fees and the various ways that they can be raised, fees and charges, and I wrote down here versus stealth taxes, because it's fair to say that a critique of the current government when it was in opposition was that some local authorities were using fees effectively as a form of stealth tax, and they're very keen to avoid any perception or indeed reality that that happens going forward. On the other hand, again, both Catherine and Alison talked about the general power of competence. And I think it's really important to recognise sort of how that could transform the landscape, because, Catherine, you're the expert on this, but as I understand it, we are the only country in Europe where essentially the ultra vires rule applies. Every other local government administration, they are free to do what they want. Other than turning that completely on its head and saying you can do anything you like as long as it's not prescribed, it's partly about that might help with the finance, but it's also about just the freedom to operate, which could actually be more important than simply a new funding stream. Could be far more important. Property rationalisation, you mentioned, that is huge. You know, the size of the public sector estate, somewhere between £350 to £500 billion. A bit of rationalisation there could really save a lot of money. New homes bonus. Let's see where that gets to. I think it's fair to say that the previous regime wasn't particularly successful at delivering new homes, so perhaps a change in course might make the difference. No doubt we'll come back to tax increment financing, but it's just worth registering at this point that, you know, it doesn't work everywhere. There are lots of examples in America where TIF hasn't been successful, and so if we are going to implement it in this country, be very careful to make sure we learn from those lessons. You talk about street lighting.
Yes.
Street lighting, not a statutory responsibility of local authorities, and yes, the Secretary of State did talk about it. far be it from me as a civil servant to put myself in the mind of the Secretary of State. But I think one difference you might observe is that he might have an opinion on something like street lighting. He doesn't follow that up with new legislation or statutory guidance or requirements to do this, that or the other. He simply makes an observation as a national politician on behalf of citizens in this country and then sees where that goes. And I think that idea of a more mature debate between central and local government with views freely expressed is quite a refreshing change, as I say, rather than that the feeling that you might want to follow it up with statutory guidance. And you talked about the cutbacks and guns. That is something we're very serious about. There were some small announcements in the budget yesterday about reductions in guidance around best value. We've recently published the list of 1,270 or so statutory duties placed on local authorities with a request to say, which one of these do we really need? And how many of these can we remove? Because, you know, quite clearly, if you just keep adding, it makes it much harder to raise funding. And then, Phil, I mean, what you had to say really spoke to my current job, frankly, because it seems to me that you've got both sides of it absolutely right. You recognise the need, and sorry, this might sound presumptuous, but you've recognised the need to cut costs now, but also to move to a transformative model that says, actually, it's not about trying to design something that will work this year, next year, or over the next 4 years, but actually a system that will work into the future and focus the council on what the council needs to do, which is meeting the needs of its clients, customers, and let others who are better qualified deal with the technology and the making it happen. That has to be right. So, as I say, Alexandra, really timely conference. Everything I heard was very reassuring.
Great, thank you.
And I'm happy to take questions about the Local Government Resource Review as well from the floor.
Fantastic. Well, that's an encouragement for everybody. So I'd like to ask you just to put up your hands if you've got a question. If you could wait for the microphone and then just stand up and say who you are and where you're from. So any initial questions? Otherwise, I shall kick off. Just one there. I'll take a few at once, so please use this time to be thinking of yours.
Good morning. I'm Vincent Polichka from Bracken Forest Council. Question mainly to Phil, please. Phil, you mentioned that there's guaranteed savings from your joint venture. I wonder if you could expand on that a little, please, how you're going to guarantee that. And second, the other interesting thing was on procurement and how you procure through BT and evade EU procurement legislation.
Great.
Right.
Shall I just see if there's any others, if that's all right? Any other questions? And then are there any other thoughts? Because if not, I've just got one for the wider panel. Just one at the back here, and then I'll ask one, and then we'll come back.
Hi, Catherine Kersall from Kent County Council. I was fascinated by the speakers. But is there a real issue here that we're faced? And I think, Phil, you shared your financial challenge, that what you're talking about is a detailed investment of time and activity and relationship building that takes a good period to build up. And we're faced with an absolute immediacy of finding new money, reducing costs, doing everything helter-skelter to meet the targets that we've got to. And how are we going to balance these two? Because it's a pretty fundamental problem for us all.
Great, thank you. And one kind of question from me. I mean, I think one of the big challenges that local authorities face is how visible council tax is, for example. So, you know, when the Moray does lots of polls, Ipsos Moray, and people always say, oh, council tax is very visible tax. It's something people get very cross about. People also assume that business rates go direct to councils. So there's a lot of just ignorance out there about where councils get their money from and how it's raised. And I think that creates a real challenge, actually, when you're talking about charging and raising fees, because there's just not a sense of where the money comes from. So I'd be interested in reflections on how you deal with that external challenge at the same time as dealing with some of the internal issues. So questions on kind of guaranteed savings and procurement. I mean, Phil, would you be happy to kick off with that and also about the short-term point?
I mean, there was two or three issues there. But just before I go into that, I think one of the most encouraging things that's happened at the moment is that actually I genuinely believe that for the first time ever, people actually really understand how local government is funded. Because before, I always use my mum as the test. If my mum understands what I'm saying, then I suspect the rest of the population will. And so she never really understood, or wouldn't have understood, that only 25% of what we spend comes through council tax. I think what has happened over the last few weeks in terms of the cuts is that people genuinely now believe that actually local government is having to make cuts because of cuts in government granting, government funding, rather than any other reason, which I actually think is quite healthy. It also enables you to persuade politicians to make some really difficult decisions, because this time around it won't be your fault. It might change next time around. The other bit that I was going to say, though, was that, and this struck me yesterday, some of you might have seen the TV yesterday morning, on breakfast time yesterday morning, they'd obviously leaked the budget fairly well, and they were actually doing the sort of vox pops thing about what would you do and what do you think of what's going to happen. And actually, they must have interviewed about 10 people, and I was sort of really disappointed that not one of those 10 people said, well, they should actually reinstate some of the local government cuts. It struck me yet again that I perhaps don't understand people out there as well as I thought I did, because all they were talking about was actually not raising fuel prices, tax cuts, and that kind of thing. And actually, it got you once again to realise that the only people who really care about cuts in our services are the people who actually get them. And actually, and for some of the services that we're talking about, it is a relatively small percentage of what we actually do. And I found that quite saddening, really. The two points that you raised before. On the guaranteed savings, it's in the contract. It says that, you know, we will give you £45 million worth of turnover, and we'll pay you. Initially, it says we'll pay you £40 million for that. So it is contractually in the contract. There are then guarantees around procurement, provided that our procurement goes through that, and it's a slightly more complicated thing. Whereby, depending on how much we give them in terms of spend and how much we actually save, because what you also get within that is a cost saving. Your issue about ODU is actually a good one, but what we did at the outset was we thought right the way through, what do we want out of this in a year's time? And all of the district councils are in there as sort of organisations who signed up to this. So whilst there's no guarantee from them that they'll actually provide the organisation with any work, the organisation can provide them with work, and they are deemed to have gone through the OG process.
Great, thank you. Alison, kind of thoughts on that kind of short-term versus mature, short-term kind of need to do things now versus the mature debate. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Certainly a lot of our reaction to the spending review and a lot of reaction we've received from local authorities was not at the level of cuts, but at the front loading of those cuts.
Yeah.
And I think the real concern there is it doesn't allow for the long-term development of sort of projects that really provide the efficiency and savings. It just results in quick service cuts and almost promotes a salami slicing type approach, because that's all you can make that quickly. And I think for me that is one of the real problems with the front loading, is that it really has killed a lot of invention. And we saw the two London councils that were looking at merging, announcing that had to be abandoned. Of Kensington and Chelsea, and I was trying to think of the other part.
Hammersmith.
That had to abandon that because of the need to make the cuts so quickly. And I think that is a real issue. And actually, probably one of local government's faults is we do tend to just get on and do it. We're not very good at shouting about it. And I think that's probably why we ended up with such a high level of cut anyway, in that actually you can depend on local government to deliver. And if you like, one of our strengths is also perhaps one of our weaknesses in terms of how national government see us.
Catherine, again, clearly the need to make short-term cuts is very challenging when it comes to the issues of culture that you were talking about, because actually culture change, as you said, it takes a long time. And if you've got that, plus you've got a sense in the media, I think, from some people in local government I've been talking to, that they're just being talked down quite a lot, just in general in the media, that there's not that support out there. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Well, I think there are two sort of almost conflicting responses to this. One is that, you know, some of you remember Rahm Emanuel's quote, you know, don't let a good crisis go to waste. Sometimes a really difficult change of circumstances can act as a driver for people not only to do things differently, but to think completely differently. And sometimes you need the level of pressure for change to rise quite significantly before you get to that tipping point. So in some ways, pressure is not necessarily a bad thing. But my own experience of efficiency is, and as I think Total Place Pilot showed, the biggest savings for local government and its partners come through tackling wicked issues. It's not about doing the same thing more efficiently, it's about sometimes about doing completely different things in order to cut off some of those continuing costs and some of those preventable costs. And those relationships, those partnership relationships, those relationships of trust that enable people to work together and share the benefits of those savings, do take time to deliver. So maybe, you know, it's something about, well, what can you do now? And what can you, you know, what do you need to say? We aren't going to be able to get there straight away, but let's continue investing in here. Because one of the things I think we're all pretty sure about, things aren't going to get better quickly. So even if something isn't achievable immediately, it may still well be worth working for it. Because even if the pressure is off in the future, that would still be given revenue that could be reinvested into other things. And the point's been made about engaging with people. It's a continuing process. It's not easy. Local government isn't always, and I think it's terribly sad, this isn't always as sexy as it might be. I do spend most of my time with local government and find it deeply rewarding. But getting the message across about what local government does and why it's so important is something that perhaps hasn't been done as well as it might be in the past. And continuing engaging with people isn't just about headlines and press releases. It's about conversations that feed back into the way the organisation treats its customers and clients so that people feel listened to and engaged with. And making that part of the everyday routine and part of everybody's job is also important, I think.
I think that engagement's important. Certainly with previous council, we did some work with Maury, really actually trying to work with focus groups and things and explain the budgets. And it was quite interesting that actually once we built up that level of knowledge, when we then went out and asked people to make that choice between cuts or council tax rise, the choice was actually to increase council tax. Unfortunately, it was for Conservative administration, so slight, not what they wanted to hear. But actually, once people understand, I think they can make those better decisions and more informed decisions. And perhaps a lot of work we need to do is building that understanding. Mm.
And I think that's very much, you know, certainly what I was thinking when I asked the external point, because I think that sense of people aren't necessarily sure what local government does. And often, you know, there's the cliche of the bins. Sometimes it's only when they're not collected that people get cross about it. But that sense of what local government's for, so people might not understand, and I think they're starting to, what the cuts mean for everyday life. But I mean, the point, Richard, on the kind of short-term versus long-term, is that appreciated in central government? Are there other things you might be doing to help?
Well, of course, the government already has provided help as a result of the consultation on the local government finance settlement. It did adjust the settlement. It introduced the transitional grant precisely to ensure that spending power didn't reduce by more than 8.8% for authorities. I think it's quite important, but you'd expect me to say this, I think it's quite important we avoid the blame game. I'm the chair of a charity that's seeing a significant reduction in its statutory income. There are lots of other charities that are facing the same because local councils are making rapid and dramatic cuts to their grants. They don't like it very much. The councils, of course, are doing it for the reasons we all know. Councils blame the government for the drop in formula grant. This government blames the previous government for getting the public finances into a mess which it now needs to get out of. But the truth is, you know, we have got to face the savings that need to be achieved. You know, we do have to get the public finances back onto a level footing. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. Yesterday's budget, you know, reconfirmed, because it was basically fiscally neutral, the budget that was set last June, that budget has been welcomed by a host of international bodies and Europe as recognising that this is the right budget for this country right now. But it's very difficult. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, it would be nice, wouldn't it, if we could have just tapered it over a longer time period with more time for adjustment. What I take some comfort from is when I hear about authorities like Phil's, and we do receive letters from other councils who said, you know, we knew this was coming, we prepared for it, it's hard, but we're ready.
Mm. Okay. Other questions or thoughts? Yeah, just at the back there.
Thank you. Matthew Mellor from Shetway. I just want to pick up the point about free councils and the sort of idea of autonomy. My question is, can the sector speak as one voice for free councils? Because we estimate only a third of councils could be self-financing. Yeah. And my worry is of a divide. You've got the northern councils who won't have the income to generate enough money to be self-financing, and we've seen through local government reforms for the last 30 years the same objectives: greater accountability, a greater link between the services you provide and the income you generate. Mm-hmm. That was one of the objectives of the poll tax. And not wanting to dwell on that, but one of the reasons it's failed is you can't equalise it across councils. Okay. And even in district councils, in the same, I'm from Kent, some have very high sources of external income through car parking charges, tourism. Others don't have the income to generate, and they don't have the business base to do it. Okay. So can the sector speak, saying we all want free councils, or is that just naive?
Okay, great question. Thank you. Any other thoughts or questions for the break? And just one from me, because, I mean, obviously that speaks very much to the local government resource review, what's happening there. And as I understand it, the terms were announced last week, I believe, and it will be about looking at business rate retention. It will be thinking about how you deal with this equalisation point and the fact that some councils Westminster makes considerably more in business rates than it spends. That's not the same for Wigan. So that is one of the central challenges. And I know that what was interesting about enterprise zones is that's looking at pooling, isn't it? So it's looking at pooling business rates across a local enterprise partnership. Mm. So I suppose a question linked to it is how's the local government resource review, how is it taking advice from the sector? I know it's not reported yet. Yeah. About how you deal with the equalisation issue. Mm-hmm. And how do you kind of think that places might try and work together? So pooling, so if you're within Kent, one area has more parking charges than another, will that be something that will be thought about as well?
A question to me.
Yes, that's to me. Although I'd like to kind of hear others' reflections on the issues in the resource review.
Very quickly on Matthew's point, I think central government would always welcome if local government could speak collectively with a single voice, especially on finance issues. But we recognise how difficult that is. I've sat through my fair share of local government finance meetings with the district county network and the county council network, and with local government association and London councils, and all of them, quite rightly, having a different opinion on how the distribution of funds should be done. And it's very difficult to get that right. But the more of a collective response, the better. On the local government resource review, yes, the terms were announced recently. And to answer Alison's point, there's no intention to rerun the Lions inquiry. Not because we don't want a thorough inquiry, but precisely because there has been a thorough inquiry. There's no doubt that Michael Irons covered every aspect of local government funding and function as well. And the purpose of the local government resource review in its first phase is specifically around business rate relocalisation and the implications of tax increment finances. And in the second phase, to look at community budget, and there'll be more on that in due course. Mm. But of course the government recognises a number of facts. It recognises the fact that Phil's authority doesn't collect any business rates at all. And it'd be rather a shame if you didn't have some form of income. Neither do police or fire authorities. So there's that. There's obviously the need for stability. You can't have a sudden shift in funding. So you need to take that into account. There are all sorts of practical implications of business rates relocalisation, and that's what the review will be looking at. So rather than having a grand external review with a high-profile individual running it and calls for evidence, because that has been done, mm-hmm. This is going to be essentially officials in the department producing a report for the Secretary of State, having had a proper discussions and engagement with actually, hopefully, most of you in this room, certainly with SIPFA, certainly within LGOV, with all the stakeholders who actually have a contribution to make about how you can do this in practice and how it might work. As I said, on tax increment financing, there are lots of lessons to be learned about how to do it and how not to do it. Yeah. So it's all about that.
Great, thank you. And Phil, can the sector speak with one voice? I mean, clearly it is different.
I think it's very difficult for them to be able to do that, because at the end of the day, this is a very simple, well, it's in theory, it's a very simple process, which is that a lot of public money is put into a machine, and the money is spread out. Now, if we don't change the amount that goes in, then if we change the methodology about where it goes, for every winner, there's a loser.
Yeah.
And you always end up in that one. In the north, there is real angst about this is the first time that we can recall a financial settlement where there was no compression.
Mm.
There was a compression in terms of, if you remember the floors and ceilings, there was effectively a compression for the floor,
yeah.
But where was the ceiling? So what you got, if you go back 2 years, I think the difference between the best and the worst was something like 4 or 5%. This time it's about 11.
Mm.
Now you convince somebody in Liverpool, for example, that it's all right that they take a 10% hit while Surrey or Dorset get a 1% increase. They just think that this is all about securing the votes in the leafy Tory suburbs.
OK. Alison, I mean, do you... If you were, what you will be inputting to the local government resource review, what would you like to see them addressing, particularly around this kind of equalisation
question? I think around equalisation, it's interesting you mentioned things like fees and charges. I have to recognise that actually there's no equalisation for those at the moment. And I think, for me, it's very much about finding, recognising that there is no ideal solution.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody here would say that the current formula grant solution is far from ideal, you know. We've come to accept it, it's there, it kind of works, but it's not an ideal solution. And I think one of the reasons I mentioned the housing review, because what's very interesting about that, is people have actually said, OK, it's not perfect. It's probably not what we'd ideally want, but it gives us that freedom.
Mm.
And, you know, is the cost worth the freedom? And I think it's having that sensible debate. Actually, what can we get in the way of equalisation that broadly works? And is perhaps acceptable to gain the greater freedoms of self-financing.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important to try and get that balance and stop trying to sort of strive for perfection, because it doesn't exist.
Catherine, what would you like to see?
Well, I think, first of all, local authorities are political organisations. Their responsibility is the well-being of their populations. That when resources are in short supply, that naturally puts them in some way in opposition to each other. But I think I felt they came quite close to speaking with one voice about the front loading of these cuts. I think there were some really consistent and coherent arguments coming out of local government about the fact that it was possible to make the savings with a different pattern of loading without it costing any more, but giving the opportunities to do the things, you know, that Catherine was referring to about the time it takes to do things right. I think the unfair impact of the cuts is quite corrosive, and I think unfairness always is corrosive, but I think it's corrosive on the relationships between local governments, because there are some people who will be saying, oh, we can cope with this. Well, of course they can cope with this, because they've got 1% cut. Heaven help you if you can't cope with it. So, but if you're coping with 8% and you see other people, you know, serving less needy populations with more money, then I think that does create a bad atmosphere within local government and is unhelpful. And I don't think local government is ever going to speak with one voice, but certainly I think avoiding some of those corrosive inputs would make it helpful for us, for a local government, to be more coherent, more consistent.
Great, thank you. Well, I think that session's covered a wide range of topics, both from what's going to happen, what's likely to happen, what's on the table for debating, and I think a clear sense that local government needs to be speaking about what it's for, what it needs, what the challenges are, but also taking advantage of the opportunities and thinking both about internal issues but also external. And then some very specific examples of how that's happening. So I hope you found it useful. It's now coffee time, which is always good. Before you go, could you please ensure during the break you sign up to seminars if you haven't already? Could you also try, if you would like to be entered into a draw for a bottle of champagne, may not, but if you would, then if you could please put your business cards in a little folder. It's SMP2, I think, who are sponsoring this. I'll be doing the draw just after the break. So if you haven't put the business card in before the end of the break, there's no chance you'll win the champagne. Could you also, I'm always asked to kind of just ask you to fill in the evaluation forms, perhaps as you go. Feedback's always really valuable. So if you could all be back here for just before 11:45,
But before you go, could I just ask you to thank the speakers, please?